thought leader and influencer. This is Luba Mayegiso and the Africa Report.
Luba, very, very good morning to you. It is 8:36. How are you doing?
Very well, Howard. How are you guys doing? I hear you've got no water in parts of Joburg and electricity.
Oh, well, no, look, electricity is, I'm hoping it's everywhere in the country, not just us. Water, yeah, I think we're okay with that at the moment.
We count the things we have.
Exactly,
because that's,
Luba.
That's easier and shorter list.
Right. And we just hope Corona's not on it.
We've been hit with load shedding, I think, from 8 o'clock. But we're getting 2.5 hours. Still not the 4 hours that you guys get.
Yeah, so Cape Town, you know what I loved about it when I was in Cape Town in December is you can quite literally set your clock according to load shedding schedules. We were staying in Seapoint and, load shedding was meant to start, I don't know, 6 o'clock, and at 5:58 or 5:59 a.m. I woke up, realized that if I didn't make myself a cup of coffee now, nobody would love me. So I dashed down the passage, quickly made myself a cup of coffee, and at 6 o'clock, quite literally on the dot, the power went out. Like, you know, in Cape Town, you can count on it. Joburg, they toy with us. They toy with us.
Sometimes they're late and people phone in to complain that the lights haven't gone off.
No, because there is a thing. Zanati and I spoke about that once. There's actually load shedding anxiety. My wife came in the one day and she said, we were meant to have load shedding 45 minutes ago. I'm so anxious. I don't know what to do now. What's going to happen? And I said, hold on, are you...
I can sympathize, because if you've told yourself you're not going to have power and it's going to come back at a certain stage, so if it's late, is it going off or is it going to stay? And I think that's the uncertainty is what is a real nuisance, I think.
I think we're a bunch of walking anxiety people.
So, Luba, what did you do to Coburg in Cape Town? Someone tried to pour hand sanitizer into the nuclear reactor, trip the thing.
Apparently, they have a pump that pumps salt water into the plant to cool it. And the spokesperson this morning said that pump seems to have ingested seaweed, and the seaweed bugged up the pump. So it should be repaired by Sunday.
And nobody thought of putting a filter.
I'm not quite sure why it's taking so long. And the funny thing was, he was on a different radio station, and he was asked, so is somebody diving down with snorkels to get the seaweed going through the nuclear reactor? He said, yeah, pretty much so. That's what's happening. And I thought, oh, wow. But it's a pump.
When they get it, we need it for our sushi. If they could pass it on so we could roll it with some rice.
It's quite amazing that no one's thought of putting a filter on that pump in all of these years that Coburg's been running. So, Luba, a couple of things we wanted to chat to you about. The first thing is, do you think that we are coronavirus ready in South Africa? From what you've seen in terms of parliament, in terms of discussion, what's your thoughts?
No, I don't think we are. I think we've approached it in a very clumsy manner, and I'll tell you why. You know, if you look at the 7 confirmed cases, they all come from Italy. And I think you and I had discussed this in the previous weeks, that other countries around the world had banned passengers from certain hotspots, you know, South Korea, China, and Italy, or at the very worst, asked them to self-quarantine for 14 days. Now, if you take our situation, had we quarantined everybody on the flight from Italy, we wouldn't be sitting with 7 people. And I think the challenge for me is that we started with 1, and even the one we had was diagnosed on the 3rd and then arrived on the 1st. And we're now playing catch-up, trying to see who they came into contact with. I mean, I saw the last stats that said the 4 that we're now that tested positive recently had come into contact with 65 people, and that number just grows exponentially, and it is wild.
Yeah, in fact, the anticipation is that
we're treating it in pretty much the same way as we treat our borders, but certainly we're very vulnerable, because we're simply assuming that if we're testing you at our Tambo and you're fine, your temperature's not high, you can go. And my view is certain countries just quarantine the people, end of story.
So we've seen a very, very aggressive attitude from Israel, and I believe that that's going to help them. What is anticipated, and I have mentioned it to our listeners, I'm going to mention it again just so people don't panic when it does happen, is the seven cases that we've seen are all cases that have been, that come in directly from overseas. What that means is we haven't yet had any cases that are local transmissions. From the end of this week, we are going to start seeing cases where they have infected other people and other people have infected other people. So we are going to get a huge number starting from Friday, and it's just going to grow exponentially. And I think what's important is that we know that this is, it's going to happen, and we need to not panic. Sorry?
How had the kids gone overseas as well? Because I thought it was the parents, or at least the father. Because remember in Durban, we've got the father who came back, then it was his wife, and then it was the two kids. Did the kids also travel?
The kids, I think, did travel. But they have tested negative as far as I understand. But the other five, there are another five people on that group. So there were 10 of them that went, 9 came back to South Africa, and I think they've tested 7 of them, all of whom are positive. But the problem with that is that, as I said, they picked this up whilst they were overseas. From the end of the week, we are going to start seeing local, person to person cases, and that's when it's going to start really frightening us. We haven't hit reality here at all. We might have some cases, but we haven't begun to understand what the impact is or can be. It's a very, very worrying situation, and I do think that there's no question we'll get through it, and as other countries have done. But as you say, unless we start taking stringent action, government-wise, I think that we might land ourselves in trouble. The things that I was saying as well earlier is companies need to start thinking about it. Howard, I don't know if you've started thinking in your organisation, but simple things like people should be told to take laptops and chargers home, not leave them at the office, because there is a chance that the next day, that during the course of the night, somebody might be diagnosed with something and means the office can't open. So there's many, the companies need to start putting protocols in place to make sure that, that they can function. It is very important to do.
But you know how it sounds very simple, but in reality, it's very complicated to actually do what you're being asked to do in terms of, you know, don't sneeze, keep your hands clean. I mean, the other day I got into a lift, and then you say, well, what do I do? Somebody sneezes in the lift. Do I stay? Do I try and get up to the next floor? You go to a restaurant, I mean, to Pick and Pay or to Willie's. You grab the little sanitizer, you wipe the basket to the trolley, you push it around, you pick up the groceries, you get back home. Now I've got to remember, do I wash my hands first? It's so much hand washing that it's unbelievable, if you really want to be, to do everything careful you're supposed to do. But what has amazed me though is the price of the masks, because the world has run short of the masks. I mean, China apparently imports, 30 million masks without the virus on a normal month. And part of what they're doing, and I think India, when you're less democratic, it's easier to deal with, because China just simply told all their companies, you cannot export masks. And even if somebody has actually ordered and paid for them, I had somebody who called me yesterday looking for the fabric to manufacture the mask. And I found a company in Durban, and they said to me, Luba, our entire production until December 2020 has been booked and paid for in advance. We cannot help you, even if you came with whatever amount of money.
Right.
We cannot help you. That's just the fabric.
The strange thing is that masks aren't even what's really meant to help us. People that are ill are meant to be the ones wearing the masks, not anybody else. And of course, unless you're immunocompromised.
But I do understand that China, particularly in factories, requires everyone to wear a mask and for the mask to be changed every 4 hours.
Wow.
Every 4 hours. So they have an appetite for approximately 4 billion masks a day.
Well, remember the lifespan for the mask is actually 8 hours, but everywhere in the world, wherever you look for a mask, most countries have simply frozen export of masks, and they've said we might need them. You know, when I spoke to people even in South Africa, they're saying to me, Luba, we've been told to hang on, and it's doing horrible things to their budget because, you know, you've bought the masks and you can't sell them, and you've got to hang on to them just in case something happens. So, I mean, you're talking of prices as little as 8 rand for the 3-ply masks. And for the N95, it's going at almost from 50 rand to over 100 rand a mask. So whoever had managed to procure masks 3-4 months ago is making an absolute fortune out of them. So that's the bizarre thing.
Yesterday, actually, I was looking for some N95 material.
How do people know this? So, Nati, how are they talking? N95?
I just wanted to see if there wasn't an opportunity to do branded masks. Company branded masks, yes. funny masks, but you can't find any of the N95 material in the country.
You can't, but if we talk off air, I might find some for you. But the challenge is, I think, is it's becoming quite paranoid. I mean, I was visiting a client who wouldn't even shake my hand. And I think the challenge here is that people are cashing in on the masks and people are paranoid. They believe that they have to have them. Not so much in South Africa. I mean, I looked around at Cape Town airport and around, and I think I've seen maybe 2 people in the entire Cape Town wearing masks, but around the world, you know, SADC and Europe, they're in huge demand. South America, it's incredible how the demand has gone. And people are almost forward buying, not just maybe for a month, they're literally buying for the remainder of the year. I'm not sure why they expect the virus to hang around that long, but that's what they're buying.
Incredible. Luba, you're the colleague that you went to, that meeting that you went to, you shouldn't be shaking his hand. You've really got to try to stop shaking hands. It is an important thing. I know it's weird, and that's what we've been talking about before you came on air, is it is strange, and there's certain people, I'm a handshaker, not really a hugger, so that's okay, but it is very difficult for me not to shake hands, but it is important that we do that.
It's instinctive, Howard, that's a problem. You know, you walked in, I haven't seen the guy in 2 years, and automatically your hand, you know, you stretch out your hand, and then you got to remember. So to reprogram your brain is a lot more difficult than you're saying. Yes, so it takes a lot of, and the problem is there's no consistency. You know, this meeting was last week. I met somebody yesterday, and I didn't stick out of my hand, and he stuck out his hand. And, you know, what do you do?
You give them your elbow.
So there's not the
elbow.
Weird for me yesterday, an older gentleman who's like older than my dad came and he stuck out his hand, and I was like, this is so weird, because normally, like, as a sign of respect, it's like weird to say no. So I literally had to shake his hand.
No, they put out their hand, you take out your hand sanitizer, you put some on for them.
Yeah. Oh, you're looking for troubles. And did he take out one or two hands? Because remember, if he's older, he's supposed to use both hands, not just one. No, that'll make Howard panic even more.
Completely.
I've already moved away from Zanati. I'm now sitting on the other side of the studio. But I don't know if you've
Howard,
seen...
just for the record, if the person's older, like your dad's age, you actually don't use one hand to shake them. You have to use both of your hands, or at least, you know, use your right hand and hold the wrist of your left. Your left hand must hold the wrist of your right hand.
And like a young bow as well.
Traditionally you use both hands.
Bows are safe.
So your chances are even double.
I don't know if you've been watching Donald Trump, who actually is genuinely at risk. Because he's shaking everyone's hands, even though they've told him not to.
And he does the double handshake.
But what makes it even more problematic, he was at CPAC, the conservative lobbying group, and a whole bunch of people were there have been tested positive for corona. 4 or 5 of the American Congress people have now gone into self-isolation, including Ted Cruz. And there are pictures of Donald Trump shaking these Congress people's hands after they've already been touched by infected people.
Oh, my word. Look, we know that we spoke about a story the other day that a priest in New York has tested positive for coronavirus, and he shook 500 people's hands in one day.
Oh, wow.
You know, and this is what this is.
As they were leaving the church?
Yeah, I would imagine. I don't know. But now that has to change. And
because remember in churches, I mean, traditionally you have a service and then the priest goes and stands at the door, and then as you walk out, he shakes your hand.
So that must have been when it was.
The congregation.
Yep, 500 people, and he is positive. It's quite unbelievable how virulent it is.
Think of people taking mass when they go line up, and the priest is taking the biscuits and
dunking it. No, they're changing that. I read there is a move to try and change that.